To call the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water to order on this Tuesday, April 5th, 2011. We're going to change the program just a little bit and try to sneak some bills through before my co-chair gets in the room. No, that's not true. But we are going to go with House Resolution Number 3 first. So I'd like to open up the first public hearing on House Resolution Number 3. And I'd like for our colleague, Representative Boone, to testify and tell us what we need to know.
Dr. Wolf here?
Yeah.
We're going to bring everybody up, if you don't mind.
Please.
Try to expedite everything.
I need it.
Okay. Okay.
You've got more tiles for Bosman.
Okay. If people could bring a chair up and sit close, because we're going to...
Representative?
Oh, there he is. Hi, Ted.
Representative?
Yes.
Boone? I'm just going to make sure that we don't take action before 3:15, simply because that's when
right.
we posted.
Got
is that
it.
Okay?
Right.
All right.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I'm here bringing you House Resolution 3. Joined today by Dr. Vicki McConnell, Director of DOGAMI, who is here to answer any technical questions you might have. And I have an entourage behind me of people who will come up and testify in also. And Oregon has a long history of emergency preparedness and used to have legislative committees that dealt with the bills addressing this issue and setting policy for the state that would enable the state to
Representative
continue.
Representative Boone, I know you're going to kill me. I'm going to close the public hearing and we're
okay.
going to open an informational hearing so that we are completely legal and we don't hamstring this in any way.
Got it.
So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing for the moment on House Resolution Number 3. And with the great power I have, I'm going to open an informational hearing on House Resolution Number 3. Representative Boone.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And boy, I love these rules. We have a plan for evacuating and caring for farm animals and pets during times of disaster, but we do not have a statewide plan to address these events. House Resolution 3 came to me from Jay Rasmussen, who's one of my constituents in Cannon Beach, and he's been very active in tsunami emergency preparedness and preparedness in general in Clatsop County, and asked me to introduce this resolution along with his colleague, who you will hear from, Ted Wolf, which has become more important in light of the recent tragic tsunami in Japan on March 11th. Unfortunately, Jay's not here today, but his colleague is, and he will be able to give you more detail on this. So with that, I will turn this over to Oregon Emergency Management.
Well, good afternoon, Co-Chair Gillum, Co-Chair Cannon. I'm Dave Stuckey for the record. I'm the Deputy Director for Office of Emergency Management. And in the interest of public safety, our office fully supports this Resolution 3. Any opportunity to plan, prepare, educate our citizens, to increase the capability to anticipate risk, limit impact, and bounce back from a catastrophic event is very, very important. This is larger than one agency, one commission, and the resources. We have to leverage everything that we potentially have in order to produce that resiliency plan. Office of Emergency Management has the State Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan that chapters out earthquakes. We also have an EOP, and we also have the Seismic Rehab Grant Program. And so any of those opportunities and then anything else that we can leverage to support the citizens of this state is certainly to be focused on and continue to work on. And so appreciate this time to be here today and support this Resolution Number 3.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Cannon, Co-Chair Gilliam, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today about House Resolution 3. My name is Edward Wolf. I'm a writer, and I'm a parent of daughters attending Grant High School in Portland Public School. I'm here to express my strong support for House Resolution 3, and I want to particularly commend Representative Boone and the co-sponsors, especially for their emphasis on increasing the seismic safety of public schools throughout Oregon. Oregon took a remarkable step when it conducted a statewide assessment of the seismic condition of public schools in 2007. No other state has done so. That assessment identified over 1,000 school buildings at risk of collapse in a strong earthquake. Nearly 650 public schools include buildings at high risk. More than 300,000 Oregon students attend risky schools. In an earthquake, these schools are likely to kill our children. House Resolution 3 asks the governor and the Legislative Assembly to recognize the strengthening of collapse-prone public structures as a top investment priority in Oregon's capital budget. This is wise. The state's Seismic Rehabilitation Grants Program, the means to make that investment, is the only program of its kind in the country, but the priority has not yet been embraced. The initial borrowing for the program, authorized at $30 million for the 2009 through 11 biennium, and subsequently cut by 25% to $22.5 million in 2010, has financed grants so far for 12 school buildings. The first projects include the Applegate School, a kindergarten through 8 school west of Medford, Lakeview High and Fremont Elementary in Lakeview, and Floyd Light Middle School in the David Douglas School District near Portland. But if we can manage seismic upgrades at fewer than 15 school buildings per year, per biennium, it will take us 140 years to fix the collapse-prone schools we know about. In the wake of Japan's seismic catastrophe, we're foolish to discount the risk of a powerful earthquake and tsunami. It can happen here, and it will. But Japan's tragedy shows something else. Few people need to die in buildings. Few outside the tsunami zone in Japan did. But here in Oregon, many will, unless we begin to think in a new way and to invest at a new level in resilience measures that will save lives. House Resolution 3 directs the state's Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission to initiate planning to protect lives and to keep commerce flowing during and after a Cascadia earthquake and tsunami. The Oregon legislature can begin by passing House Resolution 3 to get work started on that resilience plan and by funding the Seismic Rehabilitation Grants Program. And on behalf of Oregon's children, I urge you to do both. Thank you.
Thank you for that testimony. And now, I see Craig's come up.
Co-Chair Gilliam, Co-Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Emergency Management Association in support of House Resolution 3. When an event occurs of the magnitude that will occur around the Cascadia mega thrust fault and follow-on tsunami, the effect it will have will be systemic in that will hit multiple systems at the same time. And it will be have a very large geographic footprint. What House Resolution does 3 does that is warrants our support is a couple of things. The first thing is it addresses the need to seismically retrofit key structures, not only schools but also public safety facilities, that following the earthquake and tsunami, those facilities will need to be operable to provide and render assistance to those who are in need of care. Secondly, it addresses the need to pre-plan redundancy in our transportation systems, our energy systems, and our communication systems, all of which at the moment are subject to failure and which we will have to rely upon to get to those who are in need quickly. The coastal region will likely be divided from the rest of the state for a period of time, which is another one of the areas that we will need to be prepared for, and that is for, to some extent, to the extent it can be done, self-sufficiency along the coast, but also for us to be pre-prepared for the event, for us to be able to disseminate supplies, food, and emergency assistance from other parts of the state. So we are supportive of the bill, and we urge you to support it as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you'll just hold fire, we'll continue with this little, please be seated, with this little formality. So I'd like to close the informational hearing that we're having, and I'd like to open the first public hearing and possible work session on House Resolution number 3. Okay. You're the first testifier.
Thank you. My name is Mark Tyler. I'm the chair of the OSPAC Education and Communication Committee. That's the Oregon Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission. First, OSPAC would like to express its condolences to the people of Japan and affected communities of the United States as a result of the great earthquake and tsunami of March 11, 2011. As you're aware, Oregon is due for a great earthquake in the magnitude of 9+. The last great earthquake was 310 years ago, just 70 miles off of the Oregon coast in the Cascadia Fault. This has been well documented in historical records and through exhaustive research. Oregon has become a benchmark for its proactive approach in preparing its citizens and buildings to reduce injury and death during a catastrophic seismic event. However, given the current economic climate, it's easy to lose sight of our vulnerability and need to prepare for natural disasters. We're due for a seismic event that has not been known or recorded in modern history. And this will be an event that will affect our way of life for many, many years. We, as leaders of this state, must keep in mind the safety and well-being of the citizens of Oregon. OSPAC would like to recognize Representative Deborah Boone for her forethought and diligence as sponsor of House Resolution Number 3. Representative Boone has been an outstanding force on OSPAC to promote earthquake preparedness. This is a wise resolution and is needed to protect Oregonians. OSPAC would be honored to develop a resilience plan and to present it to the Oregon legislature. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next to testify on the bill? We had two sign-up sheets, and this happens occasionally. Is Lorraine Van de Kovering in the room?
Yes.
Are you signed up for the next bill?
Or two? I am here to say that we need to stop House Bill 2009.
Hold that thought, Lorraine. We're going to get there. Thank you. So we're going to move that. How about Kelly Barnett?
Same thing.
Same thing. Okay, good. And you can do both if you want. And have we already heard from Paul? And Paul, is Paul Engelmeyer here?
Same, yeah.
Excellent.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Boone.
I thought that, so I, with no disrespect to anyone who signed up, it is sometimes confusing when there's several sheets out there. So I thought that because I know you and I know what you're here for. But I also wanted to credit our entire Coastal Caucus for being sponsors of House Resolution 3. It's a Coastal Caucus effort.
Thank you, Representative. And one last question on Paulina Layton.
Mr. Chair, not necessary.
Not necessary. Great. With that, unless there is anybody else who would like to testify on the resolution number 3, I'm going to entertain a motion.
Are we in work session?
Yes, we are. Well, I said possible work session.
So why don't we close the public hearing and open a work session?
See, that's why this co-governance thing works. I'd like to close the public hearing on House Resolution Number 3, and I'd like to open a work session on House Resolution Number 3, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair.
I would move House Resolution 3 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Cannon has moved House Resolution Number 3 to the floor with a due pass resolution. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll ask Sue to call the roll.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
Aye.
Get my sheet out. Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair Gilliam?
Aye. House Resolution Number 3, having received the appropriate vote, is declared passed and sent to the floor.
Okay.
And I think I have an idea of who the carrier should be.
I'd be honored.
And it's Representative Benz. No, it's not true.
I know.
And it's Representative Boone, and we thank you and the Coastal Caucus for your work on this.
And thanks to all of you.
And thanks to everybody that came and for your patience
and my,
with this chair.
My my assistant out there who didn't answer any questions.
Great.
Figured Representative Benz might have done that. But
thank you all, and we will send this to the floor. With that, I close the work session on House Resolution Number 3. And I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2009. And if Senator Johnson and Representative Cowan would come forward as the first panel, I'd like for Representative Boone and Representative Krieger to follow them as the next panel.
I guess we're pretty sure what the rest of the audience is here about, right?
Mm. If Representative Roblin comes in the room, we'll think about accommodating him as well. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Representative Jean Cowan. I represent House District 10 on the Central Oregon coast, and I also chair the Coastal Caucus, which, welcome, Mr. Co-Speaker, is a bipartisan, bicameral group of individuals who represent all of the Oregon coast and a little piece of the Klamath Basin. And we bring you today House Bill 2009, which is coming to you as a consensus bill, sponsored and co-sponsored by all of the members of the Coastal Caucus. And it comes to you after many, many weeks' work on carefully crafted language development. This step is the culmination of more than 3 years of public hearings on just this sort of piece of the discussion of marine reserves. After the review and recommendation of the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, to finally our best effort to statutorily implement the results of those discussions and give subsequent direction to the agency. I believe you have with you, before you, a summation of the history of the process of the discussion of marine reserves from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We thought, in the interest of the number of people who would like to talk today, that you might like to forego the PowerPoint presentation from them. For those of us who represent the coastal part of Oregon, take very seriously our collective responsibility to protect our ocean resources and to address the preservation and replenishment of any stressed marine life. We also feel very strongly that we need good scientific data to correctly determine what's there, what needs help, what's healthy, and what's sustainable. And that we should not jump to incorrect conclusions based on incomplete data. At the same time, we're committed to preserving the socioeconomic health of our coastal communities, as directed in the Governor's Executive Order 0807, then Governor Kulongoski. With those thoughts in mind, I'm encouraging you to move House Bill 2009 forward, allowing us to build on the two initial pilot sites for marine reserves and add a limited system of marine reserves and marine protected areas, beginning, of course, with the collection of critical baseline data. There are a number of interest groups and individuals here today, obviously the room is very full, from whom I'm sure you'll hear about desired changes in the bill language. I would like to acknowledge that no one appears to be perfectly satisfied with the language in this bill, which may well indicate that we've found a reasonable balance. That said, on behalf of the Coastal Caucus, I would strongly urge you to move House Bill 2009 without amendment forward as quickly as possible. Let's get the data collection started and entertain any changes that might prove feasible as we continue to learn from the experience. Thank you for your interest and willingness to hear this bill.
Thank you for that opening, Representative. And if you'll stick around, I'm going to ask Senator Johnson to continue, and then we'll have questions for all three of you. Mm-hmm. If needed.
Mr. Chair, I would happily defer to the Speaker, given that I'm a visitor on your side of the building right now.
Well, that's very kind of you. You're one of the few senators that I can imagine doing that. Thank you very much. So, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm so glad you're here because you have so many interesting lives. You're an educator. you're a co-chair, and I know this part of your life is very important as well. So I look forward to this testimony.
Thank you very much, Chair Gilliam. I am Arnie Roblin from House District 9, representative, and I come to you today, and I think Representative Cowan did a very good explanation, but I want to give you a little from my perspective, how hard she worked. And I'm going to really commend her because she pushed me farther than I wanted to be pushed. I have been very acknowledging of that as we've gone through this process with the Coastal Caucus. We passed 3013 last session, and that put in process a process for community teams and others to work on giving us recommendations with respect to three new sites, the two that we already had identified, and then the Porta Coos Bay asked for another site. So they've been having a separate process, which is totally different. Then those community sites had a responsibility to report back to OPAC. They made recommendations. Those recommendations were put into a bill. And we started having conversations about that as soon as it happened in the Coastal Caucus. And my belief was that what we had set in motion, what I had agreed to, was that we would take OPAC's recommendations and we would implement them. We had many lively conversations about that in our Coastal Caucus. And that was kind of my mantra. This is the process we put in. They did this. This is what we should do. But people convinced me. Some sitting next to me twisted my arm. Others talked to me. But we really did have very good conversations. And we finally came to a bill that everyone could agree to. And it took some things out that weren't recommendations and changed some of the recommendations. But I believe what we ended up with in 2009 was a bill that represents the good faith of our Coastal Caucus to move forward with a bill that will basically institutionalize the five reserves that are presently there. Wait for a recommendation. I think the recommendation will be no reserve, but I don't know the answer to that. The Port of Coos Bay has been doing a process. They still need to have the time to send their recommendation to OPAC. OPAC still needs, for me, to let us know what they would like to do, because that's the process we set in motion, and this bill allows that to continue and to happen. And then in things that need to be changed, anything that people believe there need to be amendments for, that's one of the wonders of having annual sessions. We can come back in the next session and fix anything that needs to be done. But right now, I believe this is exactly the bill that we need to move forward on. I appreciate the work that everybody in the Coastal Caucus has done to get us to this point, and I would ask that you pass the bill as written to the floor so that we can have that conversation on the floor. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you can stick around, we'd love for you to do so, but we respect your schedule as well. Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, and I'm part of the Coastal Caucus. I chaired the Coastal Caucus. Last session, we rotate the gavel back and forth between chambers. All of us have been part of a process that has worked on the issue of marine reserves for a long, long time. We have worked through executive orders, meeting with Fishers and the governor in Governor Kulongowski's conference room. We have individually and collectively gone to meetings of fishing interests along the coast, as well as environmental organizations. We worked collectively on the promulgation of House Bill 3013 that you have already heard described to you. We have been part of the community teams that met in our various districts. If we weren't part, we were observers. And now we come to you with what we believe was a consensus bill in House Bill 2009. Our collective motivation has been consistent. I think we believe, and I'm going to dare to speak for all of us, but I think we believe that it is in the best interest of coastal communities, fishing interests, the environmental interests, and recreational interests to have a disciplined, narrow, finance series of marine reserves to determine the efficacy of marine reserves for Oregon, rather than to stand by and wait for an initiative that strips control away from Oregon. I'll stake my lot with a room full of cantankerous Oregonians before I'll cede it to outside interests to dictate to us what our coastal communities and our coastal industry should look like. There have been a number of polarized conversations as this bill has come forward. As Representative Cowan has delineated it, I will submit to you that while it is not perfect, it is a starting point, and I commend House Bill 2009 to your collective consideration. consideration as the starting point for the Marine Reserve experiment in the state of Oregon.
Thank you for that statement. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all three for your opening statements. I appreciate it very much. Representative Boone and Representative Krieger.
I'll go first because I have the shortest speech. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I just want to thank, I'll try to do this thing, thank everybody behind me who's taken the day to come here, long ways, some of you, and appreciate your interest, take it with me, in this bill and all the participation that you've given all through this last year and before. So with that said, I will emulate my predecessors and my senator in saying this is a long, you're just hearing it sometimes, some of this for the first time. You know about it, but having gone through all the time that we spent trying to collaborate on this issue, trying to get everybody's voice at the table and make sure that everybody is heard as we consider this going forward. So I would just like to say that the Coastal Caucus spent hours and hours and days and literally went over both on House Bill 3013 last session and 2009 this session, word by word of this bill. And I'm not completely happy with the outcome, but I know that I couldn't be made completely happy on it, as nobody can. But this is a process, and we're hopeful that we can work this through, and we would ask that you consider this as is written at this point and move it down to the next spot. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, co-chairs. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, State Rep. District 1, the South Coast, and you say you're not happy, totally happy with it, or?
Not totally happy.
I'll make you happy. Maybe after you come
promises,
to the reality.
Promises,
I want to really thank the people that were on the community teams and meeting day after day or month after month on this, and in a situation where it was not easy. People who had very different viewpoints on this and worked through the process and came up with the three new sites on the coast. But I want to give you maybe a little history, because I know there's two or three of you up there that have not been with this. I've been with it since the summer of 2000. When I became first aware of it was Representative Bailey's father, Bob, came down and spent some time with me in a restaurant and introduced me to the concept clear back in the 2000, prior to the time that I even came to this building. But sometime in around 2000, Governor Kitzhaber asked the question, would a system of limited reserve, marine reserves be beneficial to Oregon? I think that's a fair question to ask. That question was never answered or really pursued. In fact, to some degree, it was ignored. They went on without even answering that question. And I would say that nearly all scientific inquiry first ascertains, do you have a problem to fix? In the case of marine reserves, we don't know what they are to fix or if we really have a problem, but we're on our way to maybe ascertain that. And I really have believed, when we even did 3013 last year, that the real value for me as a coastal person, I've been there since 1943, is the marine research that would be done and what we could learn about managing the ocean, make sure we take care of it, is productivity, is sustainability. I think that, to me, I'm interested. I hope I live long enough to see that come out so we can really evaluate it. I want to talk to you a little bit when this thing started. House Bill 3534 is the first of a series of bills dealing with marine reserves. 2009, as you heard, came 3013, and then now in 2011, House Bill 2009. House Bill 3534 did a lot of things, but I view several changes that were most significant. I'm just going to talk about two of them. There was a lot there. It changed the makeup of OPAC to give Ocean Policy Advisory Committee. It made directors of the state agency non-voting members. Prior to that, the governor had totally control of the process because the agency directors who he appointed voted. That didn't seem to be logical. It added representatives from OPAC to include local government, county commissioners, commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, environmentalists, tribes, and some others. And what it really did, what we were trying to make it do, it provided for meaningful input into this process from the coastal communities, which was not present in the original OPAC makeup of the committee. It said if the recommended amendments to the plan incorporate the establishment of a system of limited marine reserves or other protected areas, the council, referring to OPAC, also shall perform an economic analysis of short-term and long-term effects that would establishment of such areas would have on coastal communities. Went on to say that any recommended amendments related to the marine reserves or marine protected areas should be submitted to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission for review and approval. Note that the recommendations of OPAC go to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, not the governor or other agencies. In some ways, the main issue around it isn't just things that Division of State Lands might have to do with mining and other things on the bottom of the ocean, or state parks might have jurisdiction along the beaches, but it was, in fact, exclusive to the Department of Fish and Wildlife to have jurisdiction over commercial fishing and angling, and that was the crutch of what these closures prevent and protect is the fishing resource. There's fauna and other things, too. After House Bill 3534 passed, the governor, then Kilingoski, did nothing. He didn't have OPAC meet for nearly 5 years. Then in 2007, things started to change. He met with commercial fishermen here in Salem, with coastal legislators being present at the time. After that, OPAC did take a look at 20 sites up and down the coast. Redfish Rock site and Otter Rock were self-starting marine reserve sites put up by the local communities. And as you know, as you heard today, three additional sites went through the community team process and were approved by OPAC, then through the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And then in 2009, House Bill 3013 came forward from the Coastal Caucus. In reality, it was supposed to appease the environmental community who were threatening an initiative to create marine reserves. That's why it was done. We were all there. We all know what the conversation was. Now we have House Bill 2009 implements and puts into place five sites. It talks about studying, monitoring, evaluates, and enforces marine reserves. It clarifies what agencies are to do. It talks about establishing a work plan, about mitigation, negative economic, socioeconomic effects. It directs the department to conduct periodic reporting of the reserves. I do have an amendment coming, and I think it improves the bill and gives more security to the coast or confidence in it. That will be coming hopefully in a few days. When all is said and done, we have five marine reserves and protected areas. We provide funding for the baseline research and assessment. Oregon can move forward and perhaps in 10 to 15 years answer Governor Kitzhoffer's original question, would a limited system of marine reserves be beneficial to Oregon? Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Krieger. Any questions while our colleagues are at this in this position? Come back up and join us. Thank you. Colleagues and guests in the room, we have testimony, written testimony, from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and they're available to us, but at this point, because of all of our guests, they are not going to testify unless we need them, but they are available. I lost Kurt, but I know he's in the room. There he is.
Hiding in the corner.
And I'd like to say we have about 20 folks to testify. We're glad you're here. We'd like you to just give you a couple of ground rules. We'd like you to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. We are eager to receive your written testimony, whether you're going to testify with us live or whether you just want to leave the testimony. Don't read your testimony, but give us the highlights. Give us the unique reason that that you may bring to the table today. We're eager to hear that. But we are going to time you so we can keep things moving. Also, we are going to ask for questions from the panel, so there might be an additional time for you to respond as well. But if we can keep to that, I'll be grateful. Also, don't put the microphone too close to your face. They're very sensitive, and you don't need to speak right into it. And again, we're glad you're here, and I'd like to first call up, we're going to do it in the order folks signed up, And bear with me because of the handwriting, my inability to read handwriting, but first we'd like to have Frank. Frank? Oh, thank you. Warren and Merrill and Ben Entekamp. Those will be our first three. And start whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Gilliam and Cannon. My name is Frank Warrens. My role here today is to give you even a more brief outline of where this issue has come from since its inception. And it was actually back when Governor Kisshaber was priorly held that office. So, as an introduction, I chaired the OPAC Marine Reserves Working Group since its start, and it seems like years ago now. It was a long process, but prior to that, I had the opportunity to get a very objective perspective of the entire West Coast as a member of the Pacific Fishery Management Council representing Oregon. The first time in the mid-'80s, and then again up until 2 years ago. I've seen what's going on in California with regard to marine protection, and I made a personal commitment to try to ensure that what went on in California didn't happen here in Oregon based on our long-standing input from citizens and working together. So, long story short, and I'll try to keep my comments right to the point, but since we began talking about marine reserves back in the 90s up until today, it represents the hard work of a lot of people, many of whom are in this room today, to put forward their points of view with regard to conservation and at the same time protecting the socioeconomic welfare of the state and the fishing communities. And an additional background, I started in the fishing business in 1976 as a charter boat operator out of Astoria. So I've got a long history of experience. My comments today would culminate in my very strong recommendation that you pass a major House Bill 2009 to the floor for a vote of the full legislature. I've worked with Representative Boone, Senator Johnson, and many others, as well as fishermen and environmentalists, and I can tell you very categorically, we do not want to have happen in Oregon what happened in California with regard to marine protection. It is totally out of control down there. Fishermen have no say-so, and I can state that as a fact. The people in this room today, again, have worked very hard, both in the conservation community, to frame marine protection or the marine reserve that you're going to be considering. Not everybody got what they wanted. There was a great deal of compromise, and a good deal of that compromise came from the environmental community or the conservation community in trying to understand and go along with the fishing interests. So with that, I would be pleased to try to answer any questions any of you may have with regard to either the history of this issue or the current.
Thank you, and we'll hold the questions for each panel. Please go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I believe that you have my written testimony in front of you. Chairs Cannon and Gilliam and committee members, thank you for providing us with the opportunity to hear our thoughts. My name is Merrill Reddish. I'm the executive director for the Audubon Society of Portland. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2009, which designates marine reserves and protected areas at Cape Perpetua, Haseda Head, Cape Falcon, and Cascade Head. I'm also here representing the Oregon Audubon Council, Oregon's network of chapters that represents residents across the state. We've been working, Portland Audubon has been working on this issue for over a decade, well before I took the reins as executive director, and we continued to dedicate significant organizational resources towards achieving a network of reserves that is science-based and results in positive conservation outcomes. Audubon, while Audubon is located in the Portland metro region with support from 12,000 Oregonians, we own and manage forested lands in Multnomah County, Lane County, and Clackamas County. In Lane County, we own, manage, and pay taxes at 10 Mile Creek Sanctuary, which is located in Yahats. And this land is directly connected to the Cape Perpetua Haseda Head Marine Reserve and Seabird Protected Area. And it's an excellent example of the land-seabird, land-sea connection for sustainable natural resource management. We are really pleased to see House Bill 2009 before you for consideration. It does reflect a tremendous amount of time, energy, and goodwill from hundreds of community members representing a broad spectrum of coastal and inland interests. And it also reflects thousands of voices from people around the state who are demanding that Oregon finally step up and protect, proactively protect, restore, and manage in financially responsible and sustainable ways the largest of Oregon's natural resources in its portfolio. And while we appreciate the fine work that the members of the Coastal Caucus have done, we believe that there are areas in House Bill 2009 that should be strengthened to better reflect the negotiated agreements in the OPAC policy guidance document, the community team recommendations, and the final OPAC documents from December 2010. These changes allow for greater conservation benefits, continuity of the public process, and increased community engagement. Portland Audubon respectfully requests that the following points be given serious consideration as this legislative bill advances. Under Section 2, Subsection H, the establishment of a research design that includes a priority for the gathering of data on the distribution and abundance of rockfish. Audubon is synonymous with birds, and we would request that avian species as well as wildlife species be included in this paragraph, all federal and state-listed species. According to BirdLife International, a consortium of 114 national organizations and based in the UK, over 130 species of seabirds are critically endangered or threatened, and many of these, including common murres, marbled murrelets, tufted puffins are all found off Oregon's coast. So Portland Audubon wants to underscore that greater attention needs to be given to all federally protected species, especially seabird conservation, during this final process. Under Section 1.3, evaluating a marine reserve proposal at Cape Arago Seven Devils after considering input from the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay, Portland Audubon strongly advocates for a network of reserves and protected areas that includes Cape Arago. This site is one of Oregon's most important ocean places with complex rocky reef habitat. It supports a diversity of wildlife
species. I'm going to have to interrupt you just for a second, and I'm going to need you to wrap it up, but I want to ask you, are your suggestions that you're mentioning, the specific ones, in your written testimony?
Yeah, they are.
And I want to double-check. I don't know that we have it yet, but I'm sure that we will, but I want to double-check that we get
it. Thank you.
And if you can wrap it up, we're going to have to move on.
To wrap up that particular note, the system works if size and spacing are science-based, and right now there is a gap between the California system and the Oregon system, and so we strongly advocate for Cape Arago, a site at Cape Arago for protected and reserves. And then finally, we also advocate for the continuation of a community team-based process. We believe that without a process like that, the outcomes could very well be one-sided without the strong conservation benefits. We strongly urge you to continue supporting that process. And finally, we just want to thank and show our great appreciation to the Coastal Caucus for all the good work that they have done, as well as to OPAC for their dedicated service. Frank, thank you for those good comments. And thank you once again for considering these notes.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ben Entiknap, representing Oceana. Oceana is an international organization dedicated to protecting the world's ocean. But as a biologist and an Oregonian, it has been an honor to work with the communities in the state to help build a network of marine reserves and protected areas off the Oregon coast. And we support the designation of marine reserves and marine protected areas at Cape Falcon, Cascade, and Cape Perpetua as recommended by the community teams OPAC and ODFW. I think about the overall purpose of this work, and I actually agree with the overall purpose that the Ocean Policy Advisory Council described in their policy document on this issue, is that the overall purpose of marine reserves is to provide an additional tool to help protect, sustain, or restore the nearshore marine ecosystem, its habitats and species, for the values they represent to present and future generations. From OPAC's goals and objectives, the Scientific Technical Advisory Committee developed guidelines for designing a network of marine reserves. And the Cape Falcon, Cascade Head, and Cape Perpetua teams worked really hard to meet those scientific guidelines, but also to avoid significant economic or social impacts. And the Scientific Technical Advisory Committee also recommended that you design a system of marine reserves in both biogeographic regions off the coast of Oregon, north of Cape Blanco and south of Cape Blanco. This bill, however, implements a moratorium on any new marine reserves in the state beyond these five sites for an additional 10 to 15 years. This bill would prevent the completion of an ecologically significant network of marine reserves, as well as remove a legitimate management tool from the toolbox for this and future administrations throughout 96.8% of Oregon's territorial sea. And we understand that some people, feeling that where we're at today, may think these five sites, which add up to 3.2% in marine reserves and 6.2% in the territorial sea and protected areas, are enough. There is, however, always new data and information coming in, and it would be irresponsible for us to not talk about the possibility of protecting other important ecological areas south and north of Cape Blanco, places like Mack Reef, Cape Farallo, and Three Arch Rocks. The current perspective is that this bill is enough, but it may not accommodate the needs of future generations or the science of climate change, regime shifts, habitat, and species loss. We also recommend that the bill be amended to include the makeup of the coastal community teams and to allow the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to implement interim conservation measures while baseline data is collected and before the actual fishing prohibitions go into effect. We're very concerned by the ability that there be damage to these sites in the interim and the manipulation of baseline data. We hope this bill can be fixed, but as it is, we cannot accept a moratorium on new conservation measures or further delay when the job is only half done. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ben, you and someone, and I think Audubon.
Merrill,
thank you.
Sure.
Both just mentioned the three sites. Do you not support the two pilot sites?
We certainly do. But this is the three sites are what's in this bill.
I support the three sites that were recommended to go forward, and certainly Redfish Rocks. I think there are some problems with the Otter Rock, significantly its size, and it makes it extremely difficult to study and monitor it because it doesn't go very far offshore.
I concur. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'd like to call Brianna Goodwin, I believe it's Lisa Cobb, and Bob Horney, please.
Lisa.
Hey.
It's my mistake.
All right.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Cannon and Gilliam, and other members of the committee. My name is Brianna Goodwin. I'm the coordinator of the Redfish Rocks community team. The Redfish Rocks community team is based in Port Orford and is made of a very diverse group of stakeholders. We have the Port Orford mayor, the Curry County Director of Economic Development, a few commercial fishermen, the port manager, several recreational fishermen. It's a very diverse group, and we've been working for the past year and a half with the Department of Fish and Wildlife for the socioeconomic and biological monitoring strategies and compliance enforcement strategies and outreach and education. The team would like to express strong support for Section 1 of House Bill 2009 for studying, monitoring, evaluating, enforcing, and implementing the Marine Reserve and Marine Protected Area at Redfish Rocks. We are very happy to see Redfish Rocks in the bill. We'd also quickly like to support the language regarding funding provisions, including the establishment of an ocean resource fund. What we'd like our testimony today to focus on is the importance of community teams and the benefits that they can bring after the designation of a marine reserve. We strongly encourage the inclusion of language that provides for community team participation in the implementation of marine reserves. Our community team has been different from the evaluation sites in that this was a community-led, community-created community team, and we've been working with a reserve that had been designated already. So our work has been very different. We're 2 years ahead of the curve in the other sites that we're working on proposing the sites. The strength of the team is that we bring a local perspective. We feel that the community teams know what's best for their community, especially in terms of communicating with their stakeholders, and can help the state be more effective in that communication. We've brought quite a bit of strength in collaborative science. You just received a brochure, and this is something that brings together the community team, collaborative science, outreach and education, and fundraising for the team. This is an Adopt-A-Fish program that we've created that the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been working collaboratively on this research with the graduate student from Oregon State University. And it's been a really amazing tool for education and has really increased interest in the biological monitoring of our reserve at Redfish Rocks. We've also held local knowledge workshops with the fleet to help design the monitoring plan that had several ODFW staff came down to work with our community members. The team, our socioeconomic working group, has decided that they want to focus on economic development around the Marine Reserve. So we've applied for a grant to do a feasibility study to see what businesses can be created or what current businesses in the Port Orford area can do to change to fill this new need that's created by our Marine Reserve and Marine Protected Area. We've also been working with Representative Krieger to get funding to establish a research station that would aid in monitoring for Redfish Rocks. The team has had a lot of very strong outreach and education events. Adopt-A-Fish has helped quite a bit. We had an event in March where we rented our little one-screen movie theater in town, and over 10% of the population came to that event, which is unheard of in Port Orford. It's 125 people. We had a photo contest that we were pleased to see Representative Krieger at, where the community took photos of the waters of Port Orford and then came and learned about the community team and saw underwater pictures of Redfish Rocks so we could create a stronger connection between the community and our reserve and protected area. In terms of biological monitoring, the working group began by helping write the monitoring plan, and now they'll be transitioning into more community-based projects that they've identified, such as actively recruiting more graduate students so that we can conduct more biological monitoring in our area.
And, well, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up yours, too.
Okay. And finally, our compliance work group, which is comprised mostly of fishermen, will be having one-on-one conversations with commercial and recreational fishermen to increase the compliance of the area. So it's our opinion that community teams are a huge asset to reserves and protected areas post-designation. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony and for this brochure. It's always wise to feature the representative that's helping you on the brochure. I think that was really...
Okay, you're next. Fish of another stripe. Thank you, Co-Chair Gilliam and Co-Chair Cannon, members of the committee. My name is Lisa Cobb. I'm the executive director of the Port Orford Ocean Resource Team, which is a nonprofit organization directed by commercial fishermen on the South Coast. Our organization led the community process and the nomination for Redfish Rocks to OPAC. We're pleased to see that House Bill 2009 includes the OPAC recommended sites, and we're excited to move forward with progress to protect biological diversity and critical habitat on the Oregon coast. We're concerned about the bill not including language about community teams, and Brianna just did an amazing job. We work closely together about talking about the benefit of a community team. The reason I'm bringing it up as well is because before we nominated the Marine Reserve, we read stacks of papers about how to do it right, and everything we read said if the community doesn't accept and engage in this place being shut, you will have nothing but trouble for the whole time you have it. You really have to keep the community engaged. It's not just about selecting the site. It's helping them understand the biology, the enforcement, the, you know, the economic development opportunities and so on that Brianna did such a good job of explaining. So we really encourage you to take a hard look at including language. I really appreciated that Representative Roblin said we can come back and change this. The problem is if we don't get the community teams in this early stage of the bill is that we lose the momentum. You have community teams in place that may need some adjustments in other areas. Ours is set up to go, but if you shut those down and try to bring them back, you've really lost a lot of momentum and a lot of good opportunities. So I really encourage you to take a look at that, please. One last comment. I remember Representative Krieger and I were at a meeting, and it had to have been like 2002 when Mr. Bailey was in Port Orford for DLCD talking about marine reserves quite a while back. And at that time, there was like a small fist fight. I don't know if you remember Representative Krieger, but Jimmy Smith said something about an environmentalist's wife, and he was going to beat him up. And there was a lot of things happening. And Port Orford wasn't lined up to have a marine reserve, but over time we decided it was a good idea. The language in the bill that talks about a 10 to 15 year moratorium really does tie communities' hands if they decide to move forward, that they want to, if they either see the benefit of existing reserves and want to get on board, or if they, for their own reasons, decide to do something. So I encourage you to look really hard at that and think about removing that to leave opportunity on the table. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Please.
I have a slide. I'm speaking in opposition of the Marine Reserves myself here. What is the purpose of this law here?
And, would you state your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Bob Horning. I'm also live in Washington County up there. Sorry about that. Marine Reserves, a lot of the arguments or the proponents are pushing for say that they will be fit for fish enhancement and that they work very well. Trouble is, a lot of things they don't tell you is that the Marine Reserves are in different countries that have no regulations whatsoever. They also say that this is to protect all species, and that the Oregon Department, the environment, or Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, do not look at all species. They look at single species. Well, actually, if you look at the slide here, this is multiple layers of Fish and Wildlife's regulations and everything else. They do look at all species and everything else. They also, this here is the rock conservation area off the Oregon coast. This next slide is off 200 miles off the Oregon coast. Everything in yellow and red is already closed to trawling. This is no fishing zones already. You know, so you're already, for the fishermen off the coast here, they're already having a heck of a time finding a place to do it. Now, the red line on the right-hand side over there is a 2005 red rockfish conservation area. 2007 is squeezed down a little bit because the Oregon Fish and Wildlife determined that, well, they, you know, they can actually fish that area now. They had some recovery and everything. So that flexes a little bit. The outside line on the left side, that never flexes. That's a permanent closure. So we already have all these, you know, huge closing areas and everything else. And during all the Marine Reserves meetings, Fish and Wildlife said specifically, this is not for fish enhancement. This is not to save any species. This is just to set aside a natural area for study. That's it. It's not to help the fishermen. It's not to help any species or anything else. It's just for study. So why are we doing it? One thing, politics. That is it. We're not trying to help the fishermen or anything else. We're not trying to help the species. This is all politics. Politics because Pew Foundation and Oceana has threatened us with the ballot initiative and everything. They've also politics of past governors. wanting to have legacies. Now, in the file I gave you there, there's CDs of this PowerPoint presentation, and also Senator Johnson, a recording of her, saying that she quite frankly did not know if this process would survive this next election, this past election, I should say. The recording was in 2010, just because didn't know where the governors were going to take it. She said there in that recording there that it was for Coolangatta's legacy. So here we are, opening up a whole area, or trying to close a whole area, because of politics. Now, is Oceana going to be satisfied with this here? No. Luckily, they went in front of me here, and they already said they're not going to be happy with it. They're not happy with it. So they're going to be at the ballot measure anyway. But look at this is what they actually plan here. 31 important ecological areas right here. Okay, this is what they're going to be pushing. If they, you know, they will eventually want this. And when are we going to say enough's enough for our people, our fishermen, and everything else? Now, this is a resolution from Associate of Oregon Counties in 2007. Associate of Oregon Counties unanimously got together and said they did not want this at all, because it was going to hurt them, hurt the fish communities, and everything else. I truly believe that if the legislators got together and said, look, guys, let the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife handle the species. Let them handle all, if there's an issue, they can expand the closed-off areas, they can regulate it. They can do it. We don't need an outside of Oregon influence telling us how to, manage our fish when they're doing a good job anyway.
Have you got a summary statement? Because we're going to have to move on. You'll have to wrap up.
Right, I will here. In conclusion, I submit to you that the legislators themselves acted as Associated Oregon Counties did and said, no, we're going to have an Oregon solution to this and not be influenced by outside people that the Pew Foundation could not get about measure passed here. There's no way. So let's not go with the politics anymore. Let's go with science, and let's not hurt our communities, our working class people who work so hard, who are the salt of this earth. That's what you're going to be doing. That's what this can do. This is a camel or camel nose underneath the tent for Oceana.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have questions for this panel? Chair Cannon.
Just first Mr. Comment, Mr. Horning, you're opposed to the bill.
Yes.
I think it's worth noting that this bill, it's done nothing else, has brought you and Oceana together in opposition to the bill. So you're on the same side of this issue, ironically. But my comment is for the folks from Port Orford. As somebody who's watched from afar, this is truly one of the more heartwarming and hopeful stories in Oregon. A locally grown community team that's gotten together around a very complex, very thorny natural resource issue with a lot of contention. We have these all over the state, and you have shown the way local communities can deal with these in sensitive ways. And I hope it's a story that can be replicated when it comes to other issues at other parts of the state. I hope it can be a model for Oregon. Appreciate your efforts.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Krieger.
I couldn't let Lisa Cobb off the hook. I might not have her here again, but I've known her since she was about 3 years old. And the stories are that she was the lookout for the guys when they were snagging. So, on Elk River.
Thank you, Representative Krieger.
That's great. Are there other revealing comments or questions? If not, thank you all for testifying. I appreciate it. And I am going to skip a little bit around because I realize we have several guests who have come a long ways, and I want to be sure that we hear from them. So, Bernie Bjork, Paul Engelmeyer, and Kelly Barnett, would you come up? Please go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Cannon and Co-Chair Gilliam, Representative Boone, Representative Whip, rest of the representatives. My name is Bernie Bjork. I live at 36293 Bartolus Loop, Astoria, Oregon. I am here representing the Lower Columbia Alliance for Sustainable Fisheries, 100 member strong alliance brought together back in 2003 against the closure of any more fishing grounds. We are against HB 2009. As for myself, I'm a third-generation Astorian around the fishing community for over 30 years. I own my own commercial fishing boat for 25. I am a alternate member of Pacific Fisheries Management Council on their Essential Fish Habitat Review Committee, and an ex-Port of Astoria commissioner. In the packet of information you have, you'll find the latest letter from the Port of Astoria. They just gave it to me April 1st. They are also against this House bill, supporting our Lower Columbia Alliance for Sustainable Fisheries. As the commercial fishing representative from Clatsop County on the Cape Falcon Marine Reserve Committee, I truly have nothing good to say about the entire process. First, there was never a true option on the table that we could say no to a marine reserve at Cape Falcon. The only thing we fishing entities were able to get from the entire process was mitigation put into the wording, along with the not very strongly worded statement on sunset provision if funding is not available for enforcement. I have to skip along, get things going. In this packet I just gave you, I want to just go over what's in here. On the third page, you will find a chart. Same thing that Bob Horning just showed you, Rockfish Conservation Area in yellow. Goes from Canada to Mexico off of Cannon Beach. Seaside is 30 miles wide. Essential Fish Habitat Area, fourth page, same thing. It goes from Canada to Mexico off of Cannon Beach, and Seaside is 150 miles wide. Never any trawling. This came about 2001, 2005. So we fishermen had a very good reason to fight against any more closed areas. Very early on, okay, the next page is a letter I wrote to Senator Johnson after the process, after the Cape Falcon process. We worked for a year on that process, and within 2 weeks of the process, it was changed by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Mr. Ed Bowles. Basically did things that we didn't even talk about in the process. Then next we have the letter from the Port of Astoria along with a resolution that I helped write back in September of 2007. Number four on that resolution, it says, our local groundfish fishermen restricted already by at least two federal area closures, Rockfish Conservation Area and the Essential Fish Habitat Area, be a part of the stakeholder process, that they be allowed to engage in talks with all government bodies that could allow the opening of previously closed areas in federal waters to compensate for the closure of traditional fishing grounds in state waters. My signature's on that.
And if you have a summary statement,
yes,
I glad
do.
For this, but please wrap up as
right
you
right now,
will.
Yes. The last page, I hate to end on negative notes, so this is a positive note. This is an article from the Wall Street Journal dated March 22nd, just a couple weeks ago, showing a healthy ocean off of Oregon. 20 million pounds of crab being delivered instead of 10 million in El Nino years. Lots of good things happening out in the ocean. Please vote no on 2009. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please.
Thank you. For the record, yes, thank you, Chair, co-chairs, everyone. Paul Engelmeyer for the record. I'm a member of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, the statewide conservation representative. I'm also a member of the Mid-Coast Watershed Council that deals with this central coast, about 1 million acres, and it actually has a number of the proposed marine reserve sites in it. And so I believe in this community process. I've engaged in it all the way along for 20-plus years. And so when House Bill 3013 came along and
gave us clear direction about forming a community team to identify the details, further evaluation and analysis about the Cape Perpetua Hasita Head proposal, I was totally amazed and engaged in that process. As that continued to evolve, and as you are well aware, we came out with a 15-to-1 vote in favor of our footprint. And it was a struggle, like Port Orford, the transition that way they went through, our Cape Perpetua Hasita Head site, same way. But we came out with a 15-to-1 vote. That was in the the OPAC recommendations, and so that was some of that key points that are in this legislation. For that 3013 process, I would have to highlight our co-chairs, Alfazar, a crabber, and Dr. Hickson, a scientist who helped lead that effort. And so I urge that to be one component of this legislation, that community team process. So as we look at 2009, and I support with a few modifications, amendments, I would like you to look closer at the OPAC recommendations and the ODFW recommendations and make sure that we incorporate all of those key points into the document. So between the community team being incorporated in, because we're going to need community buy-in to deal with the design, implementation, monitoring, outreach, there's a whole list of things that needs to be bought in by the local folks. I urge that to be a part of the bill. In terms of the research and design, H, while I definitely support the idea of doing research on some of these long-lived, depressed, depleted rockfish, you know, we have a statewide planning goal that came into play in 2000, Goal 19. And we talk about protecting marine biodiversity for present and future generations. That's a great goal. You ask the question of the agency, and Dr. Patty Burke said to OPAC, well, that's a great goal. And the answer is we don't really know how we're doing because we only do assessments on about 25% of what we manage. So when Representative Krieger drew attention to the idea of needing research, there is no question about it. These are great opportunities to focus efforts on these species that are long-lived, marine biodiversity. When we talk about marine biodiversity, we've got to include the avian species, marine mammals. The food web is what we're talking about. And it's a gap. It's an information gap that these no-take marine reserves and marine protected areas will give us a tool to better understand those issues.
And you have a summary statement.
The last item is supporting the funding component of the plan. And for 20 years, I've worked with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, landowners in the Siuslaw National Forest Service on joint restoration projects. So that funding package comes from federal, state, and local participation to develop protection and restoration strategies. So I know it can work, and I'm really pleased that that's incorporated into the plan. It's an essential component, but we need to have ground-based management options that are developed by the team to make sure that they're in there and they're consistent with the plans. Thank you.
Kelly Barnett. I was an alternate on the Cape Falcon community team. First of all, I would like to admonish all that appeasement has not been a policy that has worked very well through history. I'd admonish you to look up Neville Chamberlain's actions before World War II. They get what they want no matter what, and then you have to fight to take it back. I would like to thank the co-chairs and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify to try to protect my family, my community, my friends, and our futures. As a member of the Cape Falcon team, I have to say it was one of the worst experiences of my life. Please read Paul Hanneman's essay on the facilitator, which I have included in my testimony. From the very beginning of my involvement in this process several years ago, this has been a top-down mandate from both legislative and executive branches, as well as ODFW and DSL, shoved down our throats. We were told to deal with it or face worse consequences. The only answer we've ever gotten when we ask why these areas need to be taken away is that it is an experiment to see if marine reserves can be an effective management tool in the nearshore ecosystem. Well, I, for one, do not appreciate my livelihood and rights being taken away for an experiment. Marine reserves can and are a wonderful thing when they're placed where they are needed. Places that have been fished with dynamite had no limits or regulations to protect their resources, but our near-shore resources are strong, as shown by the latest stock assessment of Black Rock, which is rebound and is very plentiful. At any time it becomes necessary to restrict harvest or close an area for protection, ODF&W already has the authority to do that, as well as there are already areas that are closed to harvest where research can be conducted. Being conducted and pushed into unwanted compromises by Jim Owens and Ed Bowles and the staff was a very difficult and ugly process. We were told over and over that a no marine reserve proposal for this area was not up for consideration and we would not be allowed to vote on that option. We feel that this was so Ed Bowles could make the statement that at the final Cape Falcon Marine Reserve team meeting, everyone voted for a marine reserve. Everyone did not vote to get a marine reserve. A member of OPAC, Frank Warrens, early on in the meetings told us that any wholesale changes of borders or intent would not be tolerated by OPAC. We did our best to work within the guidelines set out for us, which was our mistake. We should have walked out of the process when we realized this was only about losing our rights and not to protect Oregon's plentiful marine resources. All three of the community teams were concocted and conducted in the same way. Actual stakeholders were destined to lose no matter what. The only team that had any freedom to conduct a fair and balanced process was the one formed by the International Port of Coos Bay to study if a proposal could be created for Cape Arago. This team, after meeting for nearly 2 years, has concluded that no marine reserve proposal was the only one they could support with a two-thirds majority. I believe this would have been the result at Cape Falcon if the team had been allowed to discuss and forward all options. At the final Cape Falcon meeting, we were forced to come up with compromises, to vote on. None of these options that night moved the southern border closer to the mouth of the Nehalem River, which has been widely ignored in this process. Garibaldi is listed on most ODF&W and our ocean analysis as the closest port to Cape Falcon. This is not true. OPAC members have acknowledged that Nehalem was not considered in their deliberations at all, and no fishers out of Nehalem were represented on the community team. So you can imagine my surprise when I got to the OPAC meeting to see a revised map of Cape Falcon, which is in my written testimony, the two maps, the one that the fishing representatives on the teams could have lived with mitigation, and the one that was presented at OPAC. That the revised map moved the southern border three times farther down towards the mouth of the Nehalem than they moved the northern border down to expose a wash rock and make it available for charter boats.
Mr. Burnett, do you have a summary statement that you'd like to make as well? We're just about out of time for yours. And you have written testimony, correct?
I have written collaboration for my testimony. My testimony is tied to the written parts that I've given you. It's mostly I just want to cry. This is extremely, extremely personal thing to me.
I understand.
You're going to take away the opportunity for anybody to have the bonding experience like I had with my father in that Cape where he took me and we anchored up overnight for the first time away from my mother, and we fished there. We couldn't cook them because we were on a wooden dory. We took them in and sold them, but you're going to take that opportunity away. I have a lot more. I'll try to get the rest of my written testimony to you.
Thank you. I'm glad to receive it. Thank you for your testimony today. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Boone. Sorry, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have heard from your testimony your opposition to House Bill 2009. Were we to just scrap it right now, I'm wondering what you envision as the future political process around this issue. Does it just end, or what happens in that vacuum?
I would anticipate that no matter what, there will be a ballot initiative, and then it'll be a fair fight for the voters of Oregon. and not as what Senator Johnson said in a Cape Falcon Community Team meeting, that if it goes to a ballot measure, it will be taken out of the hands of Oregonians. My understanding is only Oregonians are allowed to vote in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, follow up. Anyone else on that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Thank you, Representative. Other comments or questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point, and thank you, Kelly. You're a fisherman and a processor, and Bernie, you're a former fisherman, I don't know. And Paul, I don't know if you fish. But we're only talking about the 3-mile territorial sea. So we don't have a say as state officials over the RCA, which is a federal thing. And I do get that one of the most telling moments I had in my, and it was before I was a representative, I was assistant to a representative and went to a meeting for her and with Bernie and some other fishermen up in Astoria, and they showed me a map, and they said, and it was basically limited, this big area, and you saw the map of it, and there were different amounts of space between the 3-mile territorial sea and it. So, and I don't know how you did. I know there's no fences out there, but I know you got electronics and all that. But it is a small, if you look at the whole picture. So we do, I do at least, I can only speak for myself, take that very seriously. I understand that. That's a big area that you're locked out of now. And I know you can go past it, but in some cases that's probably not appropriate for some of the vessels who fish, or that fish. So I just wanted to let people know we're talking about what Oregon has a say over is 3 miles out from our near shore. And so we're talking about, when we talk about research on that, it's different than the kind of research you do out at sea. So I just wanted to make that point.
Representative Boone. We have 3 drag fishermen in Warrenton who have had been cited for fishing in the RCA, receiving tickets in the mail for $45,000, $25,000, $75,000. It's vessel monitoring systems will track them if they go into these things. What our fishermen are afraid of, the same thing may happen in state waters. They can't stay in business with those kind of tickets. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that.
Thank you all for testifying. Did we lose Nicole Armstrong, I think, to a doctor's appointment? I'd like to have Nadia come forward, and Mike Herbel and Terry Thompson, please. Go right in.
Hi, my name is Nadia Gardner. I live in Arch Cape, Oregon. Arch Cape is a tiny little town of 100 people just south of Cannon Beach, and I'm at the northwest corner of the Cape Falcon Marine Reserve as proposed. I'm also a member of the Ocala Watershed Council, which is Cannon Beach and Arch Cape. I'm here just to speak in support of House Bill 2009 with some minor modifications. I also submitted written testimony that outlines those minor modifications also. So as a coastal resident, I've been involved in this process for over 10 years. I attended the first OPAC meetings concerning marine reserves with Mr. Bailey. And I was part of the original group of coastal residents that were from Cannon Beach, Arch Cape, Manzanita, Nehalem, and Seaside that originally proposed Cape Falcon as a site for consideration to OPAC. And luckily for us, OPAC agreed and decided, yeah, this is worth it, and forwarded Cape Falcon for advisement to the Cape Falcon community team. And I was also a member of that community team. Our community team was very diverse. It was made up of not just fishermen. It was made up of all the ocean users that live in our communities, which are recreationalists, both fishermen, recreational fishermen, but also kayakers, surfers, beach walkers, scientists, bird watchers, and people just generally that love our coastal communities. And we were tasked with figuring out whether, number one, whether there should be a marine reserve there, and I do believe we had that conversation extensively during our community team, and number two, what it should look like. We were given an original scenario, but we were tasked just as coming out of the executive order with protecting ocean biodiversity, and that's not just fish species, but all wildlife species, and provide an area for baseline scientific research at the same time as avoiding potential negative socioeconomic impact. And you should read fishing there, because really, in the whole process, nobody cared about the other economic drivers of our communities, which really, in my area, is not fishing. It's tourism, second home ownership, and retirement. And all three actually are aided by wildlife conservation, as wildlife watching is one of the big enjoyments of our area, especially in Cannon Beach and Seaside and in Arch Cape and in Manzanita as well. So I believe that we did our job. We altered those boundaries, and unlike what Kelly Barnett said, we did not shift it and make it larger, but we shifted it just slightly south so that we could avoid some potential socioeconomic impact on the Garibaldi fishery. We dropped out what's called a wash rock, which they told us along the way that was most important to them. We also lost two-thirds of the reserve out of a marine reserve into a marine protected area that allows both crabbing and salmon fishing, because that was the data that we received told us those were the main fisheries in the area, and there would be some potential displacement of fishermen there. And so we decided, okay, fine, you know, and it was a... our team, you may know, was one of the most contentious teams because of the strength of the Garibaldi Warrington and Astoria fisheries. So it didn't quite work out in terms of the compromise at the end of the team, but ODF&W proposed a compromise, and most of us came forward, including one of our most contentious members, Tillamook Commissioner Tim Josie, to support this compromise position to OPAC. And OPAC confirms this is really what we should be looking at. And so for that reason, I support the final Cape Falcon proposal and support House Bill 2009. I do urge you to pass it forward with the following changes. Number one, please keep us involved. The community teams are a really big part of the process, and the current language really just drops out almost completely. It says ODF&W will consult or something loosey-goosey like that. We really need to be involved a whole way, and the Redfish Rocks Group is really doing a great job involving the community the whole way. Also, we don't want to delay the implementations of the three reserves beyond the 2 years of baseline monitoring. Really, that's what we need, is 2 years to really understand what the ocean looks like there and what's there, so that we can really understand what these marine reserves do in the long term. And finally, I'd like for all the effectiveness monitoring to be delayed for 10 years. Every year, fishing effort changes from place to place, so we're not really going to understand if there is any potential socioeconomic impact on the fishing industry after just 2 years, as I believe what the bill says now. And also, our fish grow really slowly and reproduce really slowly, especially our rockfish, which can live up to 100 years, believe it or not. So understanding what's happening there is going to take a lot longer. So I urge you to amend the bill to give us enough time, a minimum of 10 years, for that effectiveness monitoring.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Please.
Hello, Chair Cannon, Chair Gilliam. Thanks for giving me this opportunity to come and speak at today's hearing. My name is Mike Herbel, and I'm a member of the Coastal Conservation Association. We have we represent a sport fishing community of 100,000 members nationwide in 17 states. We're the largest sport fishing group in the Pacific Northwest. And we've been involved in this process for quite some time. I started attending the OPAC meetings back in 07 or 08 or whenever they started. I lose track like a lot of other people do. And we got involved legislatively through working with the Coastal Caucus and helping to craft House Bill 3013. We felt it was important that this discussion get taken back to the coastal communities that were being impacted by this process. It seemed that most of the discussions were being held at the executive branch and here in Salem rather than back at the coast where they should be occurring. So we supported the construct of House Bill 3013 and the process of assembling these diverse stakeholder-based community teams. There were flaws in the process, there's no question about it. As a sport fisherman, I did feel like we were being somewhat railroaded into a predetermined outcome, but it was an important process, and it did a lot to raise the community awareness. I personally was
very involved in representing the sport fishing community. I was a member of the Cascade Head community team as a sport fishing representative. One of my concerns was the outreach. There seemed to be a failure of outreach. There was a lot of folks that really had no idea what was going on the coast. And as an example, I spent a great deal of time motivating and meeting with the folks in what we now call the Salmon River community. And those are the folks that live up and down the Salmon River in the communities of Otis and Rose Lodge. And these are folks that would have been directly impacted by this proposal. They use that resource. They've used that resource for generations. And they'd been completely overlooked. They would have been completely shut out of being able to use a resource that they'd enjoyed for generations. So the community team process was very, very important in terms of evaluating these marine reserves and getting to where we are today. Now, CCA, as a policy, you know, we're opposed to marine reserves in that, particularly in this case, they're fairly arbitrary in their placement, and we're opposed to arbitrary closures of a public resource for public fishing. But you know, there is what appears to be a certain, you know, there's a political dynamic at play here. We do have some concerns about a ballot initiative and what the outcome of that would be.
Do you have a summary statement?
Yeah.
Okay.
The summary is we support this bill. We've worked hard in crafting this language. We have been participating in crafting this language. We feel it's very important to include the community teams as in an ongoing process. Their experiential knowledge base is in the institutional knowledge base in this process is going to be very, very important. And lastly, since marine reserves call for a closure of fishing opportunity, then we believe it's very, very important that no fishing license fees be used to fund this process.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Thompson, are you nervous at all? Do you understand the process here?
Believe me, it's not as bad as being out in the rough ocean.
Okay.
I wish you were there and then we'd talk. You know, my goal of being involved in marine reserves is try to build the best marine reserves possible. And the bill in front of you is kind of a hold your nose and go forward with it, if that's what you decide to do. So I looked at the bill not as to where we are in the bill, but what didn't you put in? And so here's three things that I think that could be added to the bill if you decide you want to. One is, my experience with the marine reserves is, in the case of Redfish Rocks, it got most of the research, and Otter Rock didn't get much. So from that, with a limited amount of money, I think you should probably go ahead and bring the three marine reserves in.
Commissioner, I put you off your game. You have to identify yourself for the
record. Oh, excuse me. Terry Thompson, Lincoln County Commissioner. I apologize. Anyway, you've got a situation where you've got three marine reserves and they've only got $1 million. They really couldn't handle even two. So what I think I'd do is designate the marine reserves and then incrementally bring them in once every year so that you're not having to try to deal with them all at once. They just haven't got the manpower and the boats. I think it's a thing you should put into it is that designate them, but implement them over time so they come in so that they can do the research in one area and concentrate on it and get the baseline work done. If they go after all three, it's just going to be a mess. So, and however you decide to do it, but that's one of the problems I see. The other one is, you know, gentlemen, if you'd have been here years ago and asked for a predator report to the legislature in the Columbia River, you'd have solved a lot of problems. I think, as a legislature, you need to ask ODF&W for a predator report. Ling cod and marine mammals may be the big winners in marine reserves. If you don't do it, most of the reports, all they're going to come back to you is give you the human, what's happening with the humans in there. You need to have both in order to have a good marine reserve. In case you lose the fish, you need to know where it's coming from. Is it coming from man, or is it coming from increased predators? That's something that I thought should be in the bill. Three is a simple change on page 2, line 28. We've got the word rockfish. That needs to be the harvested species. It needs to be expanded because fish that are really in that area that are important to the sport fishery are things like capazon, ling cod, kelp greenling. That's a little too narrow, so you need to have those. Now, let me explain to you why I would have voted no if I would have been in there, but my dad died on the day that, right before the bill, the final vote was cast on Marine Reserves. It wouldn't be because I'm opposed to Marine Reserves. In fact, I think, you know, we probably should go through with the experiment. But the fact that Lincoln County has three of them and a 50-mile coastline, and the rest of the coast only has two, seems real unfair to the people, and we have to take this much of the experimentation. But it's gone through a process, and if you decide to go forward, but that's why the no vote would have been cast, not because it's against Marine Reserves, but because it's an impact on one section of the coast much severer than it is on the rest of the coast. So that's my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions for this panel? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the commissioner. I looked at the bill, and on Section 6, it talks about the funding of the bill, and I think you just kind of mentioned that. And so I did take the time to look up ORS 196.550, which talks about any designation having to include a commitment by the relevant state agencies to pursue long-term funding, so forth and so on. Is that what you are referring to?
You mean in relation to the funding? No, I was relating to the $1 million that's proposed to be used on Marine Reserves. If you were able to get that other money into the Marine Reserve process, then you could possibly do all three at once by increasing the amount of manpower.
Please, Mr. Chair, perhaps when ODF&W comes in to speak, they can address that issue.
We may not get to them, but I'll try.
Thank you.
No other questions, then I'll move on, and thank you for your testimony. I'm sorry I'm going to have to be strict on the 3 minutes, but Lorraine, I said hold that thought. Now's the time. Lorraine, Fred Sickler, and Lauren Guttard. Lorraine and Lauren. Come on up. Identify yourself, and we'll stick to our 3 minutes. Thank you for coming.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Lorraine Van de Kuvering from Garibaldi, and I represent 3.5 generation fisheries. At one time, we had more... a bigger fleet than any other family-owned group on the Oregon and Washington coast. And I also had a 24/7 restaurant that sold more fishing licenses than anyone else in Tillamook County. At this time, I have 3 sons, 2 grandsons, and a brother in the commercial fisheries offshore, mainly with and they've all have different permits with shrimp, trawl fishing, crab, etc. And we also did had a large charter fishing business. And okay, I didn't prepare a written statement, but I made notes. Okay, well, what I want to say is that I think this Marine Reserve has a lot of good points, and it's necessary. However, I hope it doesn't keep growing, because I'm worried about my posterity, and I'm worried about the food producers. Our fishermen have a huge investment in their vessels. They have they buy fuel, food for the crew for so many days, and they pay taxes. They're property owners. They are they live in the community with their families, and they like to see a healthy food producing tradition to carry on. If we get they already have many regulations. They have the cow licenses, California, Oregon, and Washington, and so they abide by their restricted fishing territories. I'm sorry I can't be too articulate on some of these things. They live out there between there, and when they come home and pick up their honey-do lists, they're pretty busy little guys, but they're hard workers. And if we look at the importance of seafood producing, it's it's food is right next to air and water. So if we cut back on that, the whole state is going to hurt.
Lorraine, is there a thought you want to leave us with?
Yes. I don't know if it's polite to say, but don't mess with America's seafood. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well said. Please.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before this group. My name is Lauren Goddard. I live in Depot Bay. I own and operate a charter boat there. I'm the chair of the Depot Bay Nearshore Action Team, which took the proactive steps of moving ahead with creating, being instrumental in creating the Otter Rock Marine Reserve. And I most recently served on the Cascade Head Community Team. I'd like to speak in support of House Bill 2009. It is not a perfect document. There are places that it could be improved. I concur with the places that it could be changed and strengthened that Commissioner Thompson pointed out, but particularly in the continued involvement of community teams. And beyond that, I'd like to point out that that was a hard-fought battle, as Fred will no doubt attest, for a year in the Cascade Head community team. Neither side was really happy with the outcome, and I think that's indicative of a pretty decent compromise.
Thank you for that statement. Fred.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Let's see, maybe Co-Chair Cannon and Co-Chair Gilliam and the rest of the Honorable Committee members. My name is Fred Sickler, for the record. I'm a member of the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. I was also a member of the Cascade Head Community Team. And both committees, council representing recreational ocean users, non-fishing types, non-extractive types. And I'm also a former coastal businessman and an active member in the local Surfrider Foundation. As Lauren mentioned, the community teams were contentious, but they did end with a lot of public involvement, some good transparency for the rest of the community, some trust, some relationships were built. So I would really encourage that those community teams be left in there, but bounced. I think that's the key. They have to be bounced over all of those people that are ocean users. For over 60 years, the ocean has been a significant part of my life. It continues to influence my life direction and my life decisions. And of course, like you, I whenever I'm near the ocean or in the ocean, you know, I find my my inner self with many emotions, and noting that I am a visitor when I am in the ocean, I have long ago taken the responsibility that if I'm going to share the ocean, that I'm also going to share the responsibility to keep it healthy. Both human pressures and natural pressures are going to continue to impact the ocean in the future. Short-term thinking and short-term economics haven't been the solution for a healthy ocean anywhere. We need to look at long-term thinking, which requires awfully tough decisions and difficult political stands. But these long-term resolutions will require reaching into that inner self and looking at a direction that will help our future generations. Maintaining a healthy ocean isn't getting easier. As the population grows, it continues to have a significant impact on many.
Sorry to interrupt, but if you've got a summary for us, we'll take it.
I do.
Okay.
And
right now we have an opportunity to put small areas of Oregon's ocean into non-extractive areas for both study and for insurance against the known and the unknown. And that word insurance, I think, is an important one because science has continued to promote the tactic of setting aside areas for insurance and for study. So I think that would be my final statement.
Thank you. If there are no questions for these two, Lorraine's gone in the back, which is fine, but if there's no questions for these two, I'd like to call up three more folks. Linda Buell.
Our biggest difference is Fredders. You get in the water.
Linda Buell, John Griffin, and Doug Creasy.
Mr. Chair, while we're up here,
yes.
They're coming up. I have counted at least more than a dozen of my constituents in this room, so welcome to you all. It's nice to see everybody.
Thank you. Linda.
Thank you, Co-Chair William and Co-Chair Cannon and other representatives. I'm Linda Buell. My husband and I own a charter business in Garibaldi, and we have four children, and two of them are also
Two of them are also captains. Another son works for the ODFW. He's a biologist, and a daughter helps me run the business. I'd like to thank the Coastal Caucus for trying to craft the HB 2009. I know it must have been awful, very hard. There were several things I didn't like, my husband and I, in the statements. One was that you're going to ask for community teams and a whole bunch of involvement in deciding scientific objectives, and I think that should be left up to the scientists. ODFW has good scientists. Also, I'm not sure if you're aware of it. You heard the testimony from Oceana. They already want more marine reserves, and they're going to keep pushing for them, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out with your ballot initiative. And in case you didn't know it, there's national MPAs coming, marine protected areas. There's 52 of them, and quite a few have been they want quite a few off the Oregon coast, so you should look into that, too. Frankly, the fishermen were very upset that any stakeholder group would have the gall, the ability, and the money to induce Oregon's legislators to deny access to their well-managed, sustainable, and renewable ocean fishery resource. It belongs to all Oregonians. One of the wording we didn't like, and maybe you won't change it, but was adaptive management. That can go for you or that can go against you, I guess, like the tides. Also, we're concerned as to the outside funding. That was one of the mitigation measures we asked for since 2007, was that Oregon not accept outside funding, because then we don't feel, maybe you feel that you could be stay in control of it, but we don't. Outside funding, they're going to expect a certain return on their investment, and if you have these huge community teams that are stacked against the fishermen, then they're going to get the science they want to prove what's in a marine reserve. Cape Falcon is a low biodiversity, lightly fished area. And the kind of science that would be there to prove it might not happen if you don't have scientists saying what they need to do for the goals for the marine reserves, which right now there are no goals for them, especially except to have them. Lastly, Senator Betsy Johnson made it very clear. I've heard her talk on the radio. I've talked to her at meetings. She's very worried about this ballot initiative. That's hard for us that aren't politicians to understand, but we respect her analysis, and that may be true, but there are other things that can be done. And one of them, I forgot to give you these. I put it in the back, was a bill in 2007 that was a concept for a bill for the 2007 Oregon legislature, similar to the beach bill, that guarantees the right of all Oregonians the access to their ocean and their fishery resources. I'd like you to look over that bill.
Thank you. I'm glad we have the written as well, and I'm going to have to ask you to give us one summary statement.
One summary. Just please consider that option. Just one remark here. Goal 19 also protects fisheries. If you read it, you'll find out right after the marine and the fishermen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please.
My name is Doug Creasy. I'm a commercial fisherman, and I'm a Republican. And I went to the Republican's website for the House members, and it has greetings from Kevin Cameron. And he writes, as House Republicans, our top priority is to improve the state's economy, to create more family wage jobs. Oregon needs a stronger private sector and a healthy business climate. That's why we'll introduce and support measures that encourage business to hire unemployed Oregonians. This guy said, comedian, when you look at Marine Reserves, it's completely against jobs. I don't know what this guy's talking about. It makes me mad. And Steve, I was at a meeting a month ago, and Steve Williams, the assistant director of Fish and Wildlife, was there for the Salmon Committee meetings. And he said ODFNW promotes fisheries. And I started laughing out loud. And I've been doing this for 30 years. And I know that those people at ODFNW do not promote ocean fishing. They might promote fishing in the Columbia River, but not in the ocean, and not for Garibaldi, and not for Tillamook County. And the other last thing, I went to my tax accountant a couple weeks ago. He's from Tualatin, in Oregon, in around the Portland area. And I asked him what he thinks of the recovery, economic recovery. He says no. What he's seeing is tax returns. He's not seeing recovery. So when you take the Marine Reserves, you take the no recovery, and you take this wolf problem we got, and ODFNW is in deep trouble. And I think you people better wake up and figure that one out. Because a lot of people are going to be mad. Not in this room, but a lot of people out there are ticked off. They're losing their Oregon. That's all I want to say.
Thank you for your testimony. Please.
You have co-chairs Cannon and Gilliam, members of the committee. I'm John Griffith from Coos Bay. I was on both Ocean Policy Advisory Councils, and I'm still on the Port of Coos Bay's Cape Arago study group. I brought a little bit of written testimony, so I won't, of course, bother to read it. But on the cover page, I note some previous speakers have mentioned that there's certain guidelines and size and spacing, which has to do with how big and how often to put Marine Reserves. There's only three. These are from Governor Kulongoski. The first was on 1 November 2007. That's on the front page. That's that they'd be fewer than 10, large enough to provide for study, small enough to avoid economic impacts. He amended that a little bit with his executive order 0807, and that's there, you can see it. I would just say, as this process moves forward, to bear in mind that there's only those three criteria. That's all that were ever picked up into law, like 3013. Those other sorts of things people might wish to argue for them, but they're just not there. Just to keep this short, I would like to see the bill 2009 amended on page 1, lines 20 and 21. Instead of evaluating a Marine Reserve proposal at Cape Arago Seven Devils, I would say accept and adopt a Marine Reserve proposal in Seven Devils, Cape Arago, from the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay Marine Reserves Recommendation Committee. I'm not trying to cut the Port Commission out. I'm just saying that there's a bill here. That's a vehicle. Let's get her done. The reason I would say that is because when I was on the original OPAC in November 08, that was a big meeting at Lincoln City. There was there was 20 recommendations or something. A couple of them were for Cape Arago, which, of course, is right at Coos Bay, Charleston. OPAC voted them down. The Port of Coos Bay stepped forward and said, well, we'd like to talk about it some more, so they formed up this committee that I'm on. That's been 2 years. And on 16 March, all 34 members of the committee voted, two-thirds, 23 of us, voted for no new Marine Reserves at the Cape. There's already four protective areas out there, including a subtidal research reserve that I like to scuba dive in. But nobody apart from sports people use it. So we've got this area that we sacrificed. We don't want to change that, but nobody's using it. There's an outfit that I'm also on called the Southern Oregon Ocean Resources Committee, and it worked with Ecotrust to do an economic analysis of sport and commercial fishing effort there. And the entire Cape Arago Seven Devils area came out as the highest category of value. So right away, even suggesting to put one there violates Governor Kulongoski's criteria. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Creasy, I don't minimize one bit the emotion and the feeling you have about this bill. It touches your life much closer than it does mine, so please don't misunderstand these comments. But just so you know, Representative Cameron will have a chance to vote on this bill if it comes out of committee. But in the Division of Labor, this is how we do things down here. So he didn't bring this bill forward, but he will have a vote, and I'm glad you've voiced your opinion. The other thing I wanted to mention to you, if I'm not mistaken, tonight, the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources is hearing a bill, you may be aware of this, on the wolf situation. I don't know if you can testify, but because there'll be a long list, but you may want to stick around because it starts at 5. It'll be on that issue. So that's just information only.
Can I respond one second?
Please.
Thanks for responding to me. I got your attention.
You bet. Thank you for coming. I'd like to ask Susan Allen, our last person to testify, to come forward, if Susan's here. Identify yourself for the record, and we'll take the last testimony today.
I will. For the record, Co-Chair Gilliam, Co-Chair Cannon, and honorable members of the committee, for the record, my name is Susan Allen. I'm the director of a coalition called Our Ocean. Our coalition represents not just conservation, but scientists, business leaders, local leaders, moms, dads, and grandparents who want to make sure that they're not only fishing with their kids now, but our kids as kids will be fishing in the future. So we have constructively participated in the state process. I think actions speak louder than words. We've been participating in this process since about 2007. And as you've heard through all of this testimony, there are a lot of opinions. And the beautiful thing about this process that has really been from the grassroots up, it has been sculpted through the executive order laid out in Executive Order 0807. It's also been sculpted by Representative Cowan and the members of the Coastal Caucus in their diligence as they've been working on this energy and effort for a long time. I would also make note that due to Representative Krieger's leadership, we have the Ocean Policy Advisory Council that has really taken the bull by the horns here and set up a process that let all the stakeholders figure out what we have in common to proceed on that. So I wanted to take note of that. And it is today that I sit as the member of the coalition and the director of our coalition that represents about 250,000 members statewide, that we support the OPAC recommendations because they are the product that stands hand on the shoulders of the negotiations that started in 2008 that first identified roughly 50% of the territorial sea as reserves and protected areas. We negotiated again in House Bill 3013 in 2009. And stood behind it and supported it. And then we supported the community team recommendations in the final OPAC recommendation of December of 2010. You'll notice that because of all of these perspectives, it's important to note that there is a sweet spot. In every contentious natural resource issue, there tends to be a place where you're not going to get everybody, but you're going to get many. And where you see sort of the rubber meeting the road is the OPAC recommendation.
If you have a summary for us, we're glad to take it.
I do. The concerns that we have with the bill are the areas specifically where the bill diverges from the OPAC recommendation. You've heard some of them today. The importance of adaptive management, the insurance that the 4,000 hours of community time that has been contributed to this process to ensure that these reserves continue, the fact that the species that should be checked are not just the long-lived rockfish species, but also the abundance and diversity that we see in 124 sites around the world. But most importantly, I leave you with this thought from the chair of OPAC in his letter that I've distributed to you on the final page. Chair McMullen, who is a former commercial fisherman and a good man, The OPAC consensus was to support the community teams, ODFW site proposals as a package, with much of the support for the site proposals contingent on inclusion of all the additional recommendations. Finally, in its letter to ODFW during its deliberation last December, OPAC acknowledges that there were difficult compromises that were made throughout this process, both on the grassroots and at the statewide level. And while no one is fully satisfied, OPAC recognized that the compromise forged through this long process should be honored. Further, as ODFW reports these recommendations to the Legislative Assembly in its letter of January 25, 2011, OPAC hopes that the strong voice from the community teams and OPAC will be supported through the legislative session. And as a native Oregonian and a mom, I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there a question or comment here?
A comment, maybe. I was going to ask for a question. I'll be nice. I think people need to understand this process we've gone through over the last 10 years didn't have to happen. The Department of Fish and Wildlife already has the authority to close seasons, close areas, prohibit angling or commercial fishing, have trip limits and bag limits, and a whole host of regulatory authority to do exactly what we're doing here. The commission has never been instructed by the governor to, with the idea of the commission creating Marine Reserve, which they could have. And from 2000 until this year, no governor had ever put a dollar into Marine Reserves or Marine Research. So we all went through this when there might have been a better process if we really needed to have set aside areas to do research, to better understand the ocean, and to manage it. But we are going in this process.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Susan, we've had several references today about closed areas, and in light of those areas having been closed, and the fact that our ocean has a number of scientists represented in your organization, could you explain to us why, in light of these closed areas, reserves are important?
Absolutely. Representative Witt, Co-Chair Gilliam, Co-Chair Cannon, the importance of marine reserves are, I think, twofold. One, I'll give you the conservation answer, and one, I'll give you sort of a political answer. The conservation answer is that it is the only management tool that allows that area to rest and restore. It's the same premise that duck hunters used when they started wildlife refuges. Pretty much if you put an area that has lots of complex habitat aside, everything becomes fruitful and multiplies and then gets in larger in size and spills over. So it's literally as sexy as a savings account. And so as we move forward with all of the other good work that the state does in managing the largest of our territorial sea, largest natural resource, our territorial sea, we believe that a prudent step forward is to ensure that we're allowing those areas to percolate, and we base them on best science to allow resilience in our nearshore waters. And to bring it right down, if we have 43 commercially assessed species in 43 species of rockfish that we have off of this coast, only 8 of them are assessed, and 2 of them are in plans for recovery. It seems to me that on the political side, there is an opportunity for us to say, as a state, we have some very unique habitat here. And we as a state, if we say, the coast is an area that is worthy of economic development, and if we believe that the NOAA field station coming into the Central Coast is a worthy subject, then scientific monitoring and enforcement might be something that moves beyond the Central Coast into the tips, where I've seen those counties really look for more family wage jobs. And the interesting thing is that if you talk to these community members, no matter what side of this issue they came from, they're all interested in figuring out how these reserves would fit into the portfolio that their communities host. So I appreciate the question. Thank you.
On the political side, are you prepared to make a comment of whether you would support an initiative or not? Is that something you've thought about?
I think that I can answer very honestly that actions speak louder than words. And so what, given the fact that I have never worked for the conservation community before, and that I came actually from the natural resource harvest side of things, I worked with labor, I worked with business, what my specialty is bringing coalitions together, sort of where all the napkins kind of line up at the corners. So what I've done my darndest to do is to change a natural resource discussion from the discussions that I grew up with, the spotted owl, Klamath sucker, and the water shortage, because I come from Southern Klamath County, to try and do things a little bit differently so that it doesn't have to be a polarized subject. Now, whether or not there is success there or not, it remains in the eye of the beholder. But I can definitely say that the people that I work with and the people that I've been able to meet through the process that the state has created through the leadership of House Bill 3013 really has brought some amazing civic engagement and integrity to this process, regardless of what side of the issue has been on. It has been notable, and I've brought my daughter to see how people talk to each other, even if they don't agree.
Thank you. Representative Boone, a last comment.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I didn't quite hear the answer to that yes or no question.
I think there's a lot. I think there's a big question mark. I think that not just
yes or no question, Susan.
Respectfully, Chair, Co-Chair, I would suggest that it's not just what happens, but how it happens. So we are committed to the process at this point, but it really depends on how this all comes together. And as the director of the coalition, what I'm trying to do is keep everybody constructively participating. That's the best answer I can give you.
Just a moment. Any other?
Just a quick follow-up. I just think that, you know, in light of the fact that it has been brought up several times in the discussion, I know I would care to know. I know Senator Johnson would like to know, and the members of the Coastal Caucus, I'm sure, would be curious to know the answer to the question.
All right, we're going to leave it there, Representative Boone. I want to thank you, no matter what your opinion, for our guests in the room. I appreciate you coming. And we will carry over this bill, 2009. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2009. And I adjourn the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. Okay.